Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. The information I'm about to share comes from the National Library of Medicine. It's peer-reviewed literature, and it's important. For example, something as simple as red raspberries. Now, we all like red raspberries. Why not? And you can get them fresh or frozen. But here's why you should take them. According to Washington State University, they reduce colorectal inflammation, and that's a big deal. Now, why is that inflammation important? Because look at cancer, diabetes, arthritis, fibromyalgia, dementia. They all have something in common. Damage from inflammatory agents like free radicals on your cells. I'll give you a simple equation. This is a generalization, but it's fairly accurate. Let's just say that you have 30 trillion cells in your body. Every one of those cells has a life of its own and also an association with every other cell in your body. And the fewer inflammatory agents hitting that cell and damaging it, the better. They estimate that the average cell gets hit about 10,000 times a day and is altered, sometimes slightly altered. When you're younger, not a problem. Most of those cells can recover. We have a lot of recuperative skills, but not as we get older. The older you get, the more that damage occurs, the more permanent it is. And by the way, that's true for most things in life, the cumulative damage. So if you just change to a healthy diet that was anti-inflammatory instead of a diet that is pro-inflammatory, one that prevents damage rather than one that causes damage, you could add years onto your life and healthy years without disease. Raspberries help turn off the inflammation, especially when it comes to colorectal cancer and other conditions like ulcerative colitis, causes reoccurring intestinal mucosal injury and sustained inflammation, increasing likelihood of colorectal cancer development. Well, red raspberries are rich in a nutrient, the polyphenols, and these are anti-inflammatory. So, the more anti-inflammatory things you have, like raspberries, red raspberries, the healthier your epithelium repair and oncogenetic signaling, and all that means you're going to be less likely to have colorectal cancer. See, it's not complicated. Now, there's a nutrient called taurine, T-A-U-R-I-N-E, and it may be a key to longer and healthier life. Who says? Columbia University Irving Medical Center. According to them, a deficiency in taurine, a nutrient produced in the body and found in many foods, is a driver of aging in animals. And that's what the research found. The same study also found that taurine supplements can slow down the aging process in worms, mice, and monkeys, and can even extend the healthy lifespan of middle-aged mice by up to 12%. This was published in a very distinguished peer-reviewed journal, Science. Quote, "This study suggests that taurine could be an elixir of life within us that helps us live longer and healthier lives." All right? Now, we know a lot of other things will do that, too. We know that that NAD can do that. PQQ can do that. L-carnosine can also do that. So this is just one more thing to add to all the nutrients we should be concerned about. And why? Because at the cellular level, taurine improved many functions that usually decline with age. It decreased the number of zombie cells. These are old cells that should die, but instead linger and release harmful substances. Increased survival after telomere deficiencies. Remember I said the longer the telomeres, the longer your life, the shorter the telomeres, the shorter the cell life. Also, it increased the number of stem cells present in some tissues, which can help tissues heal after injury and improve the performance of mitochondria, reduce DNA damage, and improve the cell's ability to sense nutrients. So, all that's good. Also from the University of Sao Paulo and the University of Gacosa in Brazil, resistance training is very important. It improves sleep quality and reduces inflammation in older people with sarcopenia. Now, sarcopenia SARCOPENIA, is the decline of the skeletal muscle mass with age, leading to the loss of muscle strength. For example, just picking something else, shaking hands, and performance like walking and making just routine movements becomes more difficult. It involves chronic inflammation associated with cognitive alterations, heart disease, and respiratory disorders. In short, it affects the quality of life, reducing the independence and increasing the risk of injury and falls, even death. Sarcopenia is the decline of skeletal muscle mass with age. And boy, we don't want that. So just keep doing your resistance exercises, lifting weights, okay? It affects about 15% of all adults. And I help a lot of people who have sarcopenia. They got to get into the gym. They got to start using those muscles. Also from American University, lifestyle may be the key to improving ADHD in children. That's correct. Children with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, are often treated with medications like Adderall or Ritalin. I'm opposed to that because it's grossly overdiagnosed when it's not a brain chemical imbalance. But a new study suggests that parents can also help their kids by promoting healthier lifestyle habits. For the study, researchers looked at 184 children with ADHD and 104 without the disorder. The investigators found that those with ADHD were less likely to adhere to healthy behaviors, as according to the American Academy of Pediatrics and the National Sleep Foundation. So those guidelines included no more than 1 to 2 hours of total screen time a day, meaning no more computers, TV, video games, at least 1 hour of physical activity per day, limited intake of sugar-sweetened beverages, getting 9 to 11 hours of sleep a night, and drinking 7 to 10 cups of water a day, depending upon age. And the kids were 7 to 11 years old. And huge improvements. Huge. Now, let's do something a little more interesting. It was approximately 18 years ago that I asked the people in this audience, if you have a child diagnosed with ADHD or ADD, I'm going to do a 6-month study, meeting once a week in my office at 83rd and Broadway at that time. And we were flooded. We had so many kids, I had to do 3 nights in a row with about 40 kids per night. And then it became too difficult. The kids were just bouncing off the walls. So just the parents came, got the protocols, and then went home and applied them. We allowed no sugars, none, no headphones and cell phones, electronic devices, because that can impact the electromagnetic pulses going into the skull. That can impact the brain. We allowed no alcohol, though kids would not likely have alcohol in any case, and no meat, no chicken, no fried foods, no refined carbohydrates, no sugars, no artificial sweeteners, no caffeine, and no soft drinks. And instead, just a healthy plant-based diet, lots of fresh juices, and proper supplementation, especially vitamin B12 and folic acid. At the end of 6 months, what we found was remarkable, and the only study up to that time of its kind. We found that by getting rid of all the junk food, the sugars, the caffeine, the fried foods, the saturated fat, all that computer time and more activity playing, and supplementing with B12 and folic acid in their methylated form, B-complex, probiotics, 94% of the children returned to normal. And two of the participants were physicians, their parents, and one of them had 3 boys, and she said they just bounce off the wall. But then when she started going through their diet was just sugar and caffeine every morning and lots of fried food. She had never thought that this was important because she had never learned any of this in her 25 years of medical practice. So that's one way to help kids with ADD and ADHD. And finally, from Taijin University in Taiwan, eating pineapple can clear up eye floaters. Yes, A study carried out in Taiwan and published in the Journal of American Science has found eating pineapple regularly can significantly reduce eye floaters. And by the way, eye floaters are dark spots that appear in one's vision and are caused by age-related changes that occur as the jelly-like substance, the vitreous, inside your eyes becomes more liquid. Okay? This is from the Mayo Clinic. And that's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Now, a very serious and important look at how everyone who chose not to be vaccinated, for whatever your reasons, maybe you had already been infected, which is the best vaccine you can have, best protection, and right now the science shows you're protected for about the next 16 years. No vaccine that we have in this COVID armamentarium was able to do that. But here's where we're going with this. It's time to hold all those accountable who demanded that we be vaccinated or be punished. Why? They violated the Nuremberg Codes, and America was a signer to that to the Nuremberg Codes back in 1947. Now, Brett Weinstein of Dark Horse Forum and his wife, both biologists, they took a look at this, and you're going to see, and this is very important, you're going to see the actual wording of the Nuremberg Code. Please send this clip to Tucker Carlson. Send it over to your legislator. Request hearings under oath. And I'm going to be sending this to Danny Sheehan, constitutional lawyer, and also Robert Kennedy Jr., Mary Holland, and John Whitehead, constitutional lawyer, and others. Let's get this information out today because it shows that if you were coerced, threatened, punished, jailed, or threatened with jail and loss of job, you could be in a class action lawsuit. I predict that now that the evidence is in, and it is in, more is coming, and unfortunately the more will be the additional deaths and injuries and permanent injuries. But we relied to about every single thing concerning COVID. If you remember from the very beginning, I simply said those who have comorbidities should be treated for their comorbidities. If it's obesity, cancer, emphysema, diabetes, and not given the vaccine. In point of fact, I was correct, because you can also now, and they're acknowledging this in the scientific literature, create a hyper immune response where you already have a 5-alarm fire going off in your body because of an autoimmune condition like lupus, arthritis, etc. And now you have another 5-alarm fire. It can literally cause your organs to stop. And people who did not have COVID in nursing homes, assisted living centers, were given the vaccine without their consent and developed COVID and died. Every single thing you were told now turns out to be a lie. There's no other treatment that will work except vaccines. Lies. Why? Because if there was any other treatment, then watch the Nuremberg Codes. You could not be told to take that. And we had multiple things. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, which were all attacked. We're doing a special report on that this week. And those people should be held accountable, especially in the media. And I believe they should be sued. I believe every government official should be sued. Anyone who forced you into a situation or cost you your job should be sued. I believe that we will see more class action lawsuits in the next 2 years than all other lawsuits in American history. That's where this is going. They will try to claim that they're immune. You can't sue them. Well, they would be immune, except they lied. And we can show malice aforethought, obstruction of justice. We can show now thousands and thousands of circumstances where they had evidence that was known dangerous, and they prevented the public from knowing that, or even congressional committees from knowing this. So we're going to show you two clips back to back. I want to thank the Weinsteins and Dark Horse platform for doing their homework. This was needed. Now you have a legal basis for challenging them. Following that, we're going to go from one right into the other. Jimmy Dore has a piece about those in power, like Justin Trudeau, that clown from Canada, who should have been out of office, but is not. That tells you a lot about the majority of the Canadian people and all these other heads of state all over the world condemning you and telling you how bad it was going to be for you and threatening you. They're making threats, and they lived up to those threats. I want you to see it because I want you to have the legal precedent. I want you to have prima facie and exculpatory evidence. I want you to have everything you need in order to meet with your personal injury attorneys and those who are constitutional attorneys who will know how to bring the lawsuit so it's not dismissed on summary judgment. So you're going to get the evidence today. One clip is 20 minutes long. The other is 5 to 7 minutes long. All right? That's why I did a little shorter health and nutrition segment. Then you can call in at 888-874-4888 and share your points of view, your thoughts. But please take today's program and share it with as many people as you can. Send it off to Joe Rogan, because the people in the media, your legislators, they're not scholars. And those who are honest, and there are honest on both sides, let them see what they'll do with this. And let's see who doesn't want to know this, doesn't want to talk about it. All right? Now to the clip.
Although Nuremberg is a feature of living memory, there are people alive today, many of them, who were around to see that trial and its aftermath. It is somehow distant enough. It is 76 years ago that the trial of the doctors concluded, 1947, that people do not have the relationship with Nuremberg that they need to have. And I wanted to both point out what the Nuremberg Code is, why it matters, why it is above law, why it has a status in our ethics paradigm that is above law, and what that therefore means to see a multiple violation of Nuremberg in the present, right? What reaction should we be having to that simple fact? So let's start with some basics. There were two Nuremberg trials, and a historian may have a better view on this than I do. I welcome any refinements or corrections. But there were two trials. There was a general trial for Nazis who were captured, and there was a doctor's trial because the medical violations were a unique and profound fact of the Holocaust. And there's no gentle way to say this. We literally hung 7 doctors over violations of informed consent, which, as far as I understand it, was not formalized in advance of the Holocaust, right? So the point is, this was understood to be a principle that any rational doctor should intuit, right? And in fact, the Nuremberg trial of the doctors was an extension of the Hippocratic Oath. Every doctor swears to the Hippocratic Oath. If you have sworn to the Hippocratic Oath to first do no harm, then that has a direct extrapolation to medical experiments that the doctors who engaged in the behavior that the Nazi doctors engaged in were understood to have violated implicitly to the point that they were executed publicly, right? That is an amazing statement. That is not 500 years ago. That's 76 years ago. We literally hung 7 doctors because they violated informed consent, which was not yet codified. Mm-hmm. It became codified in 1947 as a result of Nuremberg, and it is now something that no doctor can, even though Nuremberg declared it not an excuse that you didn't know about this, you now can be held responsible for violating the Nuremberg Code because it has been spelled out and enumerated.
Yep. There's even less reason to imagine that you can escape culpability now, post-Nuremberg.
Nuremberg was specifically predicated on the Hippocratic Oath, this, this principle that goes back a couple thousand years in medicine. that one should first do no harm, which is, of course, easy to say. And then in practice, you know, obviously a surgeon does harm. So it means something like do not net harm or do not foreseeable net harm or something like that.
Yeah, you can't take an instantaneous measure of like at no point inflict something that could be harmful. Like that can't be what it means.
Yeah.
And so it does require the ability for doctors to make decisions.
Right.
And to take risks.
Which is also why it is an oath and not a rule.
Yeah.
Right? Oath means you are going to agree to this principle, this value, and then you are going to figure out how it applies to what you are doing, right? This is above law, right? That's really important to mm-hmm. me. There is law, mm-hmm. and then there are things that are above law.
It's a higher authority.
It is a higher authority, and it is putting you in a position of doing the interpretation in real time. It may be an emergency, right? You may be trying to figure out, you know, do I cut this person's leg off even though this person might survive if I left the leg intact? You know, you juggling it is the key thing that a doctor is trained to do. Mm-hmm. And the Nuremberg judges, there were three in the doctor's trial, the Nuremberg judges understood the oath to imply informed consent. They then ruled that these seven doctors were guilty of such egregious violations of that principle that they were literally hung, which I find barbaric, frankly, the idea that we hung these people. But my point is, this was an act, this was an extraordinary tragedy that was dealt with by civilization with extraordinary responses because of the profundity of all of the principles involved. And to find ourselves in the 2020s, casually facing violations of those very same principles, and the deeper you dig, the more obvious it becomes how many violations there are. I thought it was two. Informed consent. We didn't consent because we were mandated and we weren't informed because they shut down the free exchange of ideas. That's two violations. But then I looked at all the sub-provisions.
In the Nuremberg Code.
In the Nuremberg Code. And it's stunning. Yeah, you want to put that up? And actually, I'm going to read the first paragraph and then we can quickly just look at some of these. And you'll spot immediately how COVID maps onto this thing. It's incredible. So the Nuremberg Code, provision one.
So just what you're showing here is an article, a review 50 years after the Nuremberg Code published in the New England Journal of Medicine in which a piece from the original code is published.
Yes, the original code mm-hmm. is republished.
That's what we're seeing
right now. And then there's historical context presented. Mm-hmm. The voluntary consent of the human subject is absolutely essential, period. This means that the person involved should have legal capacity to give consent, should be so situated as to be able to exercise free power of choice without the intervention of any element of force, fraud, deceit, duress, overreaching, mm-hmm. or other ulterior form of constraint or coercion. So if you think the mandates don't violate this because they didn't carry the force of law, they were certainly coercive. Mm-hmm. It continues, and should have sufficient knowledge and comprehension of the elements of the subject matter involved to enable him to make an understanding and enlightened decision. This latter element requires that before the acceptance of an affirmative decision by the experimental subject, there should be made known to him the nature, duration, and purpose of the experiment, the method and means by which it is to be conducted, all inconveniences and hazards reasonably to be expected, and the effects upon his health or person which may possibly come from this participation in the experiment. The duty and responsibility for ascertaining the quality of the consent rests upon each individual who initiates, directs, or engages in the experiment.
That is not the subject's.
It is the personal duty and responsibility which may not be delegated to another with impunity. And that last phrase is interesting. Mm. It may not be delegated to someone who cannot be punished. That's what that means,
yeah.
Right? Pfizer was immunized. Mm-hmm. It cannot be punished. It cannot be It cannot have delegated to it the responsibility for informed consent, which it then falls down on and is somehow immune to being prosecuted. That is not acceptable according to the Nuremberg Code, which I find amazing. This is so clear, right? When mapped onto COVID, the mandates for these experimental treatments is absolutely unforgivable. And when I say unforgivable, I'm talking about a code that preceded the hanging of seven doctors. So I mean unforgivable. All right. Provision two, the experiment should be such as to yield fruitful results for the good of society, unprocurable by other methods or means of study and not random and unnecessary in nature, right? The experiment has to be justified on the basis that harm done would be in the service of a greater good. That's what that means.
So, and this second item in the Nuremberg Code, that the experiment should be unprocurable by other methods or means of study, maps very neatly on to the conditions for which you can get granted an EUA.
Absolutely.
An emergency use authorization, which, as we discussed in, gosh, it's going to be early 2021 with regard to the suppression of the use of ivermectin in the treatment of COVID, it was necessary that there be no other treatment for COVID that was available, else Pfizer and Moderna could not have gotten EUAs for these experimental treatments that they cleverly, sneakily, falsely called vaccines.
Which means that the suppression of information on hydroxychloroquine, on ivermectin, and on vitamin D is another violation of Nuremberg.
Right.
All right. Three, the experiment should be so designed and based on the results of animal experimentation and a knowledge of the natural history of the disease and other problem under study that the anticipated results will justify the performance of the experiment. So they obscured the natural history of the disease itself, and they could not possibly have appropriately used animals in the testing.
Well, it's interesting, actually. So this three here is reminds me a little bit of our Constitution. Nuremberg Code is obviously much younger than the American Constitution, but there are places, and we've talked about this a lot, there are places in the American Constitution that, as amazing and forward-thinking and brilliant as our founding fathers of this country were, they could not have foreseen some of the technological advances that were to come hundreds of years in the future. This phrase, that the experiment should be based on the results, should include a knowledge of the natural history of the disease, belies the fact that they could not foresee that we might, by at some point in the future, be creating Frankenviruses, right?
Yep.
And so, you know, fully aside from like, oh, they're obscuring, they're still claiming this is zoonotic origin, they're still looking for, you know, stuff in the animal market, all of this, it's actually not going to be possible. Three won't be possible in a world that has already allowed the kind of gain-of-function research that almost certainly produced SARS-CoV-2 in the first place.
Or at the very least.
Which means that the research might be understood to be itself in violation of Nuremberg.
That's a good point. And at the very least, it is an absolute obligation not to obscure the origin because, as we said here on Dark Horse, what I have heard nowhere else, that what was done, the protocols that were deployed that created the virus have implications for how you might expect it to evolve downstream and what you might want to do to treat it and prevent it. So we had a right to that information and they obscured it, violating yet another provision of the Nuremberg Code. Four, the experiment should be so conducted as to avoid all unnecessary physical and mental suffering and injury. Gee, the denial of natural immunity and the immunizing of people who were too young and healthy to be vulnerable to this disease cannot be justified, and some of them were harmed. So that was unnecessary physical and mental suffering and injury.
Sure it was. And I mean, there was also a lot of playing. So much of what was accomplished was done through sleights of hand, sleights of language, in fact, right? And so, call it a vaccine. You're not an anti-vaxxer, are you? Well, what if I say, among other things, that my objection to that is that that thing that you're calling a vaccine isn't a vaccine? No, it's a vaccine. We said it was. And so it was also experimental in nature. It was brand new. And this mRNA technology, as we've talked about extensively, as many people have, was brand new. And up until that point, there had not been any successful research in humans. And there hadn't been for this product either, but we just kind of like, you know, threw the dice. And it wasn't ever called to us, those who were told we must take this thing, an experiment. And so the language of Nuremberg is an experiment. What it has been recognized as is an experimental treatment, right? And we will get later at the end of the hour to other sort of squidgy words that are used to obscure that fact. But you can call it everything, anything you want, and it doesn't change the fact that you were experimenting on humans.
Well,
with this treatment that was called a vaccine.
Not only that, but because of the way that this was accelerated and then deployed globally, you were dealing with, I think it is phase four, right? There
phase
are three of the safety trials. So it was in
phase clinical
trials, right? That is to say, in release of the stuff into use in the public, there is then the intense monitoring of signals of adverse events, right? That is understood formally as part of an experiment. And in this case, you know, what I've said before is this was an experiment in every way but one, which is that we did not seek to collect the data that would have made it a valid scientific experiment, immoral, but at least scientifically valid. But if you're going to obscure the evidence of a harm, then you're deliberately not looking at the results of the experiment you're running.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, of course, unnecessary physical and mental suffering and injury. Mm-hmm. What the hell? The gaslighting of the injured is, to me, the most jaw-dropping fact of the whole thing, right? That you would take people, especially people, you know, Maddie DeGarry, who, a child who participated in your safety trial because she wanted to do her part to address COVID, is gravely injured. And then you pretend that she's not, that she's faking?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what kind of diabolical monster would you have to be to do that? Mm-hmm. Right? And yet we saw it across the board. They're still gaslighting the injured. And that is unnecessary physical and mental suffering and injury as outlined in provision 4 of the Nuremberg Code, which again, we hung 7 doctors over.
So I guess, at some level, I wonder, I do think I was naive as a child to think that never again was important and necessary, but it would never really happen here. Because Nuremberg was 1947, you said?
The doctor's trial.
The doctor's trial.
Concluded
in 47. So I'm thinking about the Tuskegee syphilis experiments.
Yep.
Right? They began, I just looked it up, in the early 30s. But they continued well past 1947. And in fact, apparently, it was in 1947 that, where was it? Syphilis, I think I found this, I can't say, oh yes. Penicillin became the recommended treatment for syphilis in 1947.
Wow.
Same year as the doctor's trial, the Nuremberg Code became reified. So Nuremberg happens and syphilis becomes the recommended treatment for syphilis the same year.
Penicillin.
Sorry. Penicillin becomes the, what did I say?
Syphilis doesn't work.
No, it really doesn't. Okay. So let's start over. The Nuremberg Code becomes reified and penicillin becomes the recommended, the understood to be an effective treatment against syphilis, both in 1947, 15 years into the diabolical Tuskegee experiments in which Southern black men are allowed to get sick and die from syphilis.
And deliberately not treated.
Not treated and not told. And, you know, it is such an obvious example of a lack of informed consent that it is the thing that everyone has some recognition of. Tuskegee, you know, brings up that, you know, these experiments just the way Nuremberg brings up the code, even though Tuskegee and Nuremberg are places that presumably other people live in and, you know, would like to be recognized for other things. But so the Tuskegee experiments continued for decades.
Into like the 70s,
yeah,
am I right?
Decades, early 70s, I believe, after both the Nuremberg Code. And there is a known simple powerful antibiotic that does treat the very thing. So given that, why are we in fact surprised?
Well,
that Nuremberg was violated perhaps across every single tenet during COVID.
Here's why.
Okay.
I have never heard anyone defend Tuskegee.
Right.
Okay. I've never heard it.
Okay. But so it ended, and I don't know exactly, like early 70s. So yep. 50 years ago, right?
Yeah.
50 years from now.
Well, that's my point.
50 years from now, if we haven't managed to disappear ourselves from the planet, 50 years from now, the prediction is no one will be defending what happened
here. That is exactly right? What
no one will be defending it. And the vast majority of people who were gleefully shaming those of us who were trying to speak up for science and for truth and for humanity, they will have either largely died or have pretended they will have pretended that wasn't really their position. They will talk about how honorable and upstanding they were in fighting the fight when they are absolutely lying. Like, no one will acknowledge 50 years from now, just as no one acknowledges now, 50 years after Tuskegee ends, that they were kind of involved and thought it was okay.
Right. I would just point out in passing, Claire Lehman returned to Twitter after having stormed off months ago, and said nothing of having been wrong or anything like that. And so anyway, it will be interesting to see if she owns up. But I think your point, my point, nobody defends Tuskegee. Your point, which I think is exactly correct, in the end, nobody's going to be able to defend this either, because it's equally obvious how diabolical it is.
Yep.
But in the present,
the moment people are gleefully still standing by their, I don't even know what it is. I was going to say some nasty things. So people are still interested in shaming and destroying the careers of people who said no.
Milk Bar TV put together this compilation of people discriminating against the unvaccinated. Let's watch. I'll play it for you. It's just like 2 minutes long. Watch.
The community that faced the most restrictions on their freedoms in the last year were those who made a choice not to be vaccinated.
Premier of Quebec, François Legault, announcing a Canadian first, that the province is looking to implement a special tax on the unvaccinated unless they have a medical exemption.
Nation by nation, Europe is turning into a two-tiered society in which those who refuse to be vaccinated will live under lockdown, without full access to society or jobs, facing fines and even jail.
Tonight, millions of unvaccinated Austrians on lockdown for at least the next 10 days, an order from the government as the country tries to slow the spread of the coronavirus.
The unvaccinated have already been in lockdown for almost a month, and next year will have to pay $4,000 in fines every 3 months unless they not only get vaccinated, but get booster shots. Germany's COVID restrictions have been so draconian, this German mother says her 10-year-old daughter wants to die.
Philippine Commission on Human Rights warning government about implications of President Duterte's order to bar unvaccinated people from going outdoors. The CHR says the order may result in undue discrimination.
Probably don't see it like this. There's two different classes of people. If you're vaccinated or if you're unvaccinated, you have all these rights. If you are vaccinated.
That is what it is. So, yep. Yep.
The vaccine mandate has kicked in for more than a million authorized workers, no longer allowed on site if they haven't had a jab.
And there was never any science behind any of that. And that doesn't outrage people. It outrages me, but it doesn't outrage the majority of people who voted for Joe Biden. It doesn't outrage the majority of people who are going to vote for Joe Biden. It doesn't outrage them. I was a Democrat my whole life. What happened that you stopped being outraged by being lied to by Big Pharma and the government in such an egregious way? Anyway, here we go. Back to this. And you turned into authoritarian Nazis. just like that. Bodily autonomy out the window. My body, my choice. You bent yourself in a pretzel to get rid of that. Here we go.
If an employer allows an unvaccinated staff member on site, they can be fined more than $21,000 and the business will be hit with almost a $110,000 fine. Workers who falsely claim they've had the jab will wear a $10,000 fine.
There's people that don't want this mandatory vaccine. How do we manage this?
Well, then they won't be going to work.
Okay.
It's very, very simple.
But don't think you can get on a plane or a train beside vaccinated people and put them at risk.
Queensland is punishing unvaccinated teachers, docking their pay for the next 18 weeks. Okay, so we think it's safe enough for you to come in and to teach our kids in the classroom to do the job, but we're not going to pay you what we pay the other teachers. I don't know about this.
The fingerprints of unvaccinated teachers in New York City were allegedly sent to the FBI with problem codes flagged on them.
When the city puts these problem codes on employees who have been terminated because of their unconstitutional policies, not only do they have this flag in their files, but their fingerprints are sent with that flag to the FBI and the New York Criminal Justice Services.
With every teacher job, fingerprints are essential. So whatever job I decide to pursue, they will have to get my fingerprints and do the necessary search to see if there are any flags. And now I know I have these flags.
Anka Mrak-Taritaš, 4. studeni 2021. Citiram, sada je trenutak da se kaže ljudima, ne možete više nigdje ako niste cijepljeni.
This morning, it's a race against time for DJ Ferguson and his family. The 31-year-old father of two with a third baby on the way desperately needs a heart transplant. But his mother says Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston says DJ can't receive an organ donation because he won't get a COVID vaccine.
It is almost common policy to say, if you don't have all your vaccinations, including COVID, you're going to be less eligible for a transplant than other people who are going to do better with a scarce heart.
Dr. Berecki, 23. travnja, citiram, svijet bi bio puno ljepši bez necijepljenih. Sramite se. Sram neka vas bude.
So they have been the most discriminated against group that I've ever witnessed in my lifetime. That's a pretty extreme level of discrimination that we have seen. But this has been an extraordinary.
So that's quite a compilation of the horrors. And nobody, none of those people are apologizing. They're just going right on. They're still doing it. I still see people using the term COVID minimizers. I still see people that just brain, with that kind of brain rot. That they're still wearing masks in public. Outside and using the term COVID minimizers. Those people have brain rot, and I have no trouble forgiving them if they ask for forgiveness. I have no trouble. I know what it's like to be scared and you don't act like you thought you think you would in a tough situation. But all those people who are still wearing masks outside and calling people COVID minimizers and blocking me on Twitter for telling the truth about COVID and saying about me on Twitter for telling the truth about COVID. Now you know how they would act when times got tough. Now you know they would immediately go along with the regime. They would immediately throw you under the bus, anybody who got outside the cult, and they wouldn't stand up for their principles, the principles of bodily autonomy and my body, my choice. And how about the principle of always being skeptical of big pharma and government, especially when they come together to mandate an experimental medical treatment?
You've been given a lot of important information. That's what I try to do on this program. Give you scholarship, give you facts, so that you can have proper judgment. At least you'll have a freedom of choice that's based upon real science. We're going to take a break and come back with your phone calls. Back in a moment. And by the way, every day I've been Zoom streaming this, so if you want to watch our programs and watch the clips, you can go to PureN.live, scroll down to the archives, scroll down to Gary Nall's archive, and you can watch the program. Okay? Except some people don't have that. and just want to listen, that's fine as well. But for those of you who are just listening, what they're going to be reading, the Weinsteins, is, well, the actual document from the Nuremberg Tribunal. All right? So, back in a moment. Please stay with us. In the interim, I'll share a few additional ideas. Over the next 3 months, I'll be preparing 12 important original white papers. These are in-depth investigative reports. And in these reports, all of which will be fully footnoted, you will see that everything that we were taught was intentional. It was not by accident. On the one hand, if you said we had mistakes and we learned lessons from those mistakes, let us look at those mistakes and the consequences, that's one way. But unlike Jimmy Dore, I do not forgive those people who did this with malice, and that's most people, or those who sit on local station boards or national boards and criticize any program that itself criticizes the bad science or proprietary science that we're all faced with. After all, listen to one thing that was said, that they're condemning people, no matter what their excuse, no matter what justification they had for not being vaccinated, as if you didn't get vaccinated, you're the enemy. And this is just one. I've already played you a clip of some of the other broadcasters and the media host also doing condemning, and celebrities like Howard Stern condemning. Well, okay, you can say, well, these people are not scientists, they're not scholars, you know, they're entertainers of different levels, and that's fine. But when someone uses their position of authority to demean entire segments of the population, and then they make it very political, well, it's only the right wing, and then if you're right wing, you're deplorable, you're despicable, you're racist, you're misogynist, you're homophobic. Says who? Show me your proof. In fact, the latest study I saw that even Trump, as much as I do not like that person, he had about between 5.6 and 6.1% of his entire vote in his election came from people that you could arguably call white supremacist. The rest of them, huge percentage of those were former Democrats who had been lied to, frequently were independent, and voted as a protest vote. Not because they liked Trump, but because they disliked Obama, Clintons, and everyone else that had lied to them and used them for their own political and ideological and personal gain. We are incapable of this moment as a nation, certainly individuals are, of making reasonable choices based upon being properly informed. To be properly informed, you have to have all the information. And we don't. But we will. Because I'm doing a series of articles for the sole purpose of seeing that those who are responsible are held accountable in a court of law. There are thousands upon thousands of attorneys around the world who are preparing or serving lawsuits, and much of my research hopefully will be used in that process. See, there's one thing when you make an honest mistake. You correct it and you say, we were wrong, are bad here. Okay, what were the consequences? How many people died? How many people lost their jobs? How many businesses closed? And you say, but that's not my responsibility. Oh, yes, it is. You know, if you were the ones in positions of power and you dictated these terms and they were punitive, then you're in violation of the Nuremberg Codes. And that's why I wanted to hear those sections and have that information so you can share it with others. You would think that some constitutional lawyers would have been all over this. I haven't found that to be the case. Today, for example, Dr. Michael Yeadon wrote this, quote, I no longer trust any, in capital words, product of the biopharmaceutical industry. I recently saw a survey of views about COVID-19 vaccines and about all vaccines, probing levels of trust and confidence. I went further than most. I no longer trust any product of the biopharmaceutical industry, not merely because a handful of companies have either manufactured deliberately injurious gene-based injections or allow vax whitewashing of military products by use of their familiar brand names, though either is bad enough and means senior management was okay with deliberate poisoning of the entire population of the world. No, the irretrievable loss of trust extends from the evident willingness to commit global-scale crimes against humanity to the total failure of regulatory agencies, which we had hitherto entrusted to evaluate, regulate, and inspect, and therefore keep reasonably honest in this industry. At its best, the scientists and doctors have discovered new insights into some diseases and invented new treatments for those conditions. As a rule of thumb, manufactured pharmaceuticals, which are mechanically based upon natural products, which have been used by humans for long periods of time, contain a high percentage of genuinely useful products. Opioid relievers of strong pain are life-changing. I am myself a regular patient for such products, the need for which arose directly from two incidents of medical incompetence, negligence, extending back 30 years of my life. We all know that these drugs are inherently addictive, and so we must use them with care. You think? Yeah, 100,000 Americans died last year, and there was no educational process to prevent this. And so what we have is we have a pharmaceutical industrial complex aligned with the media and political parties throughout the world, deeming that there is only one truth, theirs, and no one else has a right to their opinion, because then you're an anti-vaxxer. This is childish and foolish. This is the talk of gibberish seven-year-olds. And yet, this is what passes for truth in the United States. The United States and the media and the politicians couldn't find the truth under any circumstances. That's where we're at. That means you have to find your own truth. That means you have to do your own homework. That means that otherwise this is going to happen again. Bet your life they're going to come up with another pandemic and use the same protocols, and they'll achieve it. You'll have a certain percentage of people who are willing to look for the truth and say, no, you're not going to put that in my body. My body, my choice. Where's the women's movement? Non-existent on this issue. Where's the health movement? Non-existent on this issue. Where are the professors of ethics? Where are the people who are supposed to be teaching us the truth, guiding us? They're not here, unfortunately. And the small number of people who are standing forward and sharing this, well, they've been deemed irresponsible and are to be erased, challenged, ghosted, gaslighted, and destroyed. So just be aware where we're at. It's going to get a lot worse before any kind of thing gets better on any level. That's why I'm sharing with you about the coming economic collapse, because the BRICS nations are going forward. And that doesn't mean I support the social policies of China and Saudi Arabia. I do not. I'm merely giving you a fact that when their gross domestic product, which is now official, Saudi Arabia's using the BRICS bank, when their gross domestic product, meaning their total income, exceeds that of the United States, Europe, and Great Britain and Canada, then watch the dollar collapse. And then watch your 401ks, watch your pensions, watch the amount of money that's taken out of the economy. That's good for those who control the economy. It's bad for everyone else. And yet people will wait and not do a thing, thinking that somehow it's not going to be that bad. It will be. We're going to say goodbye to BAI. They got to go to their news. We're going to continue at the top of the hour. Again, I don't see any calls in. If we have calls, just let me know, and I will put them on board. Hear what they have to say, 888-874-4888. Dylan, do we have a call coming? Kyle, any calls?
No, sir.
Yes, no?
I already said no, Gary.
Could you let me know if we have calls? Okay. Then we don't have calls at this moment. So hopefully you're thinking about what was discussed. And also, good for those people taking their money out of banks. Do your homework. Find out what the reserves are, what the outstanding debts are that put a bank at risk, including a credit union, And that's one place you can put your money and also get out of debt, because that's when they have power. And by the way, just found out this morning, the largest hotel in San Francisco, almost 2,000 rooms, 1,900 some rooms, and the second largest in San Francisco closed, gone out of business. They were there because of the conventions that were coming through, always booked. One took up a whole block. I used to stay there at the Hilton when I go out to San Francisco. Beautiful area. Just enjoyed walking around. Can't do that now. And how that happened, what you see now happening in San Francisco, you're going to see happening in about 15 other major cities. That's the politics. That's wokeism. And how much will that be tolerated before the average person finds their voice and speaks it? Let's hope it's soon. But the latest study here shows that a huge amount of money, $472 billion, with a B, billion dollars, was pulled out of U.S. banks in the last 3 months. Why? Because depositors are exiting in historic numbers. They don't trust the banking system. Good for you. You shouldn't. They don't trust the government. They don't trust the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. And they don't trust the Fed. They don't trust the Treasury Secretary. As well, you shouldn't, based upon what they've done in the past and protecting the bankers who created the problem and not the depositors. We're out of time, everyone. I want to thank you for calling in, or not calling in, but listening. And we hope to be able to share much more positive information on tomorrow's program. I've got three major original investigative reports I'll be breaking over the next week and a half. Have a nice day, everyone.